Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Join me as I seek out the small incremental changes being applied in other industries that we can learn from and that can be applied in healthcare. Can these changes bring immediate value, but also add up to the big improvements and revolution we need in healthcare? Come along with me to explore the possibilities. My innovative guests from around the globe have used small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. And today, I'm delighted to be joined by Tom Knight. He's the CEO and founder of Invistics. Tom, thanks for joining me today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So for the benefit of the listeners, just tell us a little bit about your background and how you arrived at this point, if you would.
Sure. Trained as an engineer, and that's really a job description for solving problems. And my whole career has been finding problems that my team and I can solve. I founded Invistics after a short career in manufacturing and supply chain. And then in the 20 years since I founded Invistics, we found really innovative ways to help our customers track their inventory and prevent diversion, as we'll talk about on the show.
Yeah, so that's interesting. You talk about engineering, and you know, we've just had the Apollo 11 landing sort of anniversary. And I've just been listening to a whole show that sort of talks about engineering and all of these people. I want to say it was 400,000 people that contributed to this. And your point about, you know, engineering as being a foundation is just really resonates with me right now. It's just extraordinary that you say that as I'm sort of going through this whole process. So thanks for sharing that. So tell us a little bit about Invistics. And I think it's worth going back to the beginning a little bit, because this is not the traditional path for a healthcare style company, right?
That's true. Yeah, Invistics, which I started 20 years ago, it stands for Inventory, Visibility, and Analytics. And our original focus was in manufacturing companies to track their inventory so that they could be sure they had it in the right place at the right time. And we quickly found it worked well in the pharmaceutical industry, whether it's a manufacturer of medications or anybody that handles those medications across the supply chain. The real breakthrough, the incremental change, came when we realized that software was good at tracking controlled substance inventory, the kind of inventory that needs to have, you know, really good compliance and prevent those thefts from occurring anywhere in the supply chain. And that happened about 10 years ago when we started working with companies that were handling controlled substances that really needed that tight control. And then about 4 years ago, we actually had an opportunity funded by the National Institutes of Health to extend that software into healthcare facilities, because there's a lot of controlled substances, a lot of valuable medications in health facilities like hospitals. And they believed that our software would do a better job of tracking that inventory and detecting if they're stolen than anything that was out there. And that brought us into healthcare for the first time. And with the backing of the NIH and support from hospitals around the country, now these last 3 years, we have discovered that it's working very well in these healthcare facilities. And it's an area of major expansion for us, because the technology is helping a lot of hospitals to prevent and detect diversion that they otherwise wouldn't have known about.
So it's interesting you bring up the NIH, and you know, it's one of my areas of passion, this sort of investment in fundamentals of science. And when you talk about that, where did the origin idea come from? Was it internal to Invistics? Was it interactions with the, how did that arise?
Yeah, well, going back to the beginning, the first few years of Invistics, we actually thought that we could bring to the table some really innovative approaches for tracking inventory. And we're funded by the National Science Foundation, back to basic science. Their directorate of engineering saw that American manufacturers would really benefit from having more advanced inventory analytics. And they gave us a grant, it's called a Small Business Innovation Grant, that got us off the ground and allowed us to build the earliest versions of our software. And so that then, coupled with NIH, is what's allowed us to bring that solution to healthcare. The idea of working with NIH actually came because of the nation's opioid overdose crisis, and how so many of our, you know, neighbors and family members are suffering from the addiction of opioid substance use disorder. And it got me as an engineer and my coworkers thinking, well, how could we be part of the solution? What could our know-how and our technology do to prevent these drugs from getting into the wrong hands or leading to somebody to become addicted or to overdose. And we realized that was an opportunity, and we're delighted to find NIH was looking for that kind of innovation, and that's when we submitted our application.
So a little bit of a combination of things of, you know, personal experience and, you know, a problem that I think we've all become acutely aware of, this, you know, just dreadful circumstance of opioid addiction and, you know, the expansion across our, I mean, it's endemic through society. And then the sort of lateral thinking that allowed you to see the value proposition of what you were doing in supply chain management and tracking, but sort of extending it a little bit further. Do you recall any significant sort of insights that led you to that point?
Well, one of the insights was realizing that tracking medications in a manufacturing supply chain, while it sounds very different than tracking medications as they move through a hospital, the data and the analytics to do that are actually quite similar. And realizing that the way we were helping, say, a pharmaceutical manufacturer track this inventory could be valuable to how a nurse or a pharmacist or an anesthesia provider would be tracking it in the hospital was quite similar. And seeing the problem in that way from a supply chain perspective and an inventory tracking allowed us to find ways to detect the theft of drugs in these healthcare facilities that you wouldn't necessarily have seen if you were coming at it from a different perspective.
So it's interesting. I hear a lot of sort of common themes, and this is another one that, you know, I'd highlight as sort of that incremental step is the adjacent possible. Where can you apply this same technology in an adjacent space, but it's slightly different? People sort of perceive it to be different, but it proves not to be, and you're sort of proving that out. So that's very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what's developed is we now have end-to-end experience from the very beginning steps, like the research and development for new drugs. We're helping companies track the small samples that are on chemists' bench or clinical trials. We're tracking all that all the way through to the point where it's introduced to the market and now you're manufacturing at scale, out through the supply chain to the distributors, and now out to healthcare facilities like hospitals or retail pharmacists. So it's basically one long supply chain, and we're tracking it from the very beginning of the product life cycle all the way through to the patient.
So we've talked a little bit about the heritage, but you've teased some details of this that are truly intriguing to me. And I know it represents one of the major challenges in the healthcare setting. And, you know, so I practiced as a physician. It was not lost on me on a regular basis when I would be administering controlled drugs and opioids that, gosh, that was easily accessible were I to want to do so. And, you know, unfortunately, some people end up down that path. It sounds like you're doing something really quite unique in this space to be able to identify that. You know, so if there's diversion of supply that is obvious, you know, that's relatively easy. But it sounds like you're picking up other things. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we're really tracking each medication from the time it's purchased and shipped into the facility all the way through the movements as it's moved through, say, a central pharmacy and then out to a nursing unit or procedure area like an operating room. And then when it's dispensed from that location, say, by a nurse and administered to the patient. So each one of those steps, there is an opportunity to divert. If I'm the pharmacist buying it, I could slip a bottle into my briefcase and take it with me. If I'm the nurse who's dispensing it, I could claim to give it to my patient when in fact I put it in my pocket. And similar things with anesthesia. So what we've been able to do is train our computer through machine learning to detect patterns that could be diversion. Any of those cases I described in pharmacy, nursing, or anesthesia. Some of them are pretty easy to detect once you get all the data together, which is a challenge in itself. So as an example, if I'm not a very skilled diverter and I take a pill from the cabinet and I put it in my pocket, it's going to be pretty easy to see I removed one pill from the cabinet, but I didn't report what I did with it. I didn't put the administration of that pill for a patient in the electronic medical record.
Right.
So our software will say one pill was dispensed, zero pills were administered, we have potential diversion. Where it gets particularly valuable is most people who are diverting, they're quite skilled at covering their tracks. Hmm. And they'll take the time to falsify records so they won't be easily detected. So the classic pattern is I take a pill from the cabinet, I put it in my pocket, but I claim to have administered it to my patient. And what we've done is train the computer to detect those kind of patterns of diversion as well. Much harder, but the common patterns that exist. And that's the key to why the computer is able to detect diversion better than anything that's come before it.
So let's pick up on something there, because it sounds like there's a sort of, you know, key assets in this is the gathering of all the data, which you almost, you know, passe talked about. Well, that's difficult. I know that's really difficult. What did you do and what was your sort of approach to that? How did you overcome this sort of accessing and tracking of data all the way down, it sounds like, to the actual administration?
Yeah, I appreciate you pointing out how tough that is. Easy to say, but very difficult to do. So part of what Envistics had to learn to do early in our history is to pull data from multiple different sources, even if typically those IT systems don't talk to each other. And in the context of healthcare, we've actually pulled from a total of 6 different systems. One of them, for example, is what has been purchased from the wholesaler, and that tells us what's been shipped into the facility. I've mentioned a few others, like the automated dispensing cabinet. That's an important source of data because we know how many controlled substances were dispensed to each nurse. The third one that I've mentioned is the electronic medical record, where we're administering it in the medication administration record. And traditionally, those 3 systems and the other 3 that I can talk about have never really talked to each other. And anybody that's looking for diversion, they might look only at the data from the cabinet, right, and they don't have the benefit of having consolidated that with what was charted in the electronic medical record. So the key thing we had to do when we expanded into healthcare is learn how to pull the data from all those different systems and to consolidate them in a way that we could join medications, we could join users. And it's easy to say, but again, hard to do.
Right.
Two examples we see all the time is you might have a list of users for your automated dispensing cabinet, and you might have a list of users for your electronic medical record, and you could have one person listed as the maiden name in the first system and the married name in the second system. And so just having to reconcile the users is a challenge,
right,
which we've learned how to do. Medications is another one. The formulary, which is the list of medications in the first system, might call medications a different thing in the second system, and we've had to learn how to join those. So long story short, by having done this for almost 20 years now, we were able to bring that skill set into healthcare and consolidate the data from these 6 different systems that allows us to see patterns of diversion that you'd never see if you're only looking in just one of the systems.
Fantastic. So as I sort of think about all of that integration of data and essentially that normalization so that you can reconcile those individuals, you've got that foundation, but then it's not obvious to me how you then approach this diversion cases that are non-obvious. What are the signals that you're able, or the machine learning that the technology is picking up?
Mm-hmm. They range. We have about 150 things that we look for each time medication moves. Some of them are really easy to explain. I ordered 3 100-count bottles of hydrocodone tablets from my wholesaler.
Right.
And I only received 2. And so I have a missing bottle of 100 tablets. And because I reconciled 2 systems, I saw that I missed a bottle. That's an easy one to describe.
Right.
Some are quite sophisticated. You're probably familiar with how in nursing, we often ask patients their pain on a scale of 1 to 10.
Yep.
And then that is charted in the electronic medical record. We have discovered that nurses that are diverting will often falsify pain scores because they might be pocketing the pain medication. And as a result, the computer can find strange patterns. I'll give you one example that's easy to understand. Let's say that you and I are covering one patient, and you're on the night shift, I'm on the day shift, and I'm diverting, and I'm claiming that my patient's in pain, and I'm charting a pain score of 9, and I'm charting that I gave them a lot of pain medication when in fact I put it in my pocket. Now you come in on the night shift, you ask the patient their pain score, they haven't been in pain at all, so you put in a 1, you put in that there's no need for medication, then that's gonna tell the computer, hey, something went strange on the day shift, this patient was only in pain on that particular day. That's a case that we can all understand. The opposite of that makes my blood boil. That's when a patient is in incredible pain and the nurse doesn't give the patient the pain medication they need and they falsify the pain score down. Then you come in on the next shift, the patient's in incredible pain because they didn't receive their pain medication. And that sadly happens a lot, that a patient that's in pain doesn't get the medication they need. And that can be detected in these kind of pain scores. So that's a more sophisticated approach. You can imagine even in a mid-sized hospital where you might have 1,000 nurses caring for hundreds of patients, how many transactions are in this huge haystack of data. And the computer's really good at detecting these kind of patterns that it has learned represent diversion, and then handing those needles in the haystack to the right person to investigate.
So for those of you just joining, I'm Dr. Nick, the incrementalist, and today I'm talking to Tom Knight. He's the CEO and founder of Invistix. We're talking about opioid tracking, opioid drug diversion. We were just talking about the various parameters that you use. And one of the things that strikes me about that as you share this is, well, this is good learning material. If I'm a diverter, you've shared some of your, I don't want to say secret sauce. Now you've told me it's, I don't want to say obvious, but, you know, that makes sense. Now I've got to sort of, you know, so are you playing a little bit of a game is the wrong term, but it's a competition essentially. And as you learn, you've got to keep learning. Is that part of what's going on here?
Yeah, we're always going to need to look for new patterns of diversion. It is a cat and mouse game, if you want to use that term. Many of the people who are diverting are themselves addicted. You know, they have substance use disorder. It's a disease that's really going to require them to often get these medications, and they're going to find creative ways to try and steal them. And so part of why the NIH is so excited about what we've done is now that we have a network of hospitals across the country, anytime any of them find a new pattern of diversion and they put that case into our database, now machine learning learns that new pattern.
Right.
And so if somebody in Vermont found a clever way to steal that hadn't been done before, and they put that into the database and as part of our machine learning model, now every hospital across the country that's using the software just got a little smarter, and they'll be able to catch a diverter that's using that pattern. I will say that the techniques I've described here are well published, so it's not like this would be news to someone trying to cover their tracks.
Right. But
I will also say that it's great to have the computer able to learn both from new cases, and it also learns from its mistakes. So we measure as part of our research our true positive and false positive rates, also our true negative and false negative rates. And at the beginning of our research, it would flag things as potential diversion that in fact were false positives. And we would have our hospital go and investigate. They would confirm it was not diversion. They would put that result into the database so that then went into the training set. And now the machine would learn from its mistake, if you will.
Right.
So over time, it's not only gotten smarter at finding patterns of diversion, meaning fewer false negatives, but it's also learned from its mistakes in the past, and we have fewer false positives.
So, you know, that group learning is really attractive. You've obviously got a large number of customers that are using this, and it sounds like a willingness to share that learning because this is a, you know, it's a broad sort of challenge. Can you give us some sense? I mean, I don't even have a sense of this. What the sort of percentage? You talk about a needle in a haystack. How often is this occurring? Is it a pervasive problem? Is it a small problem that, you know, how does it rank?
Yeah, it's a bigger problem than most people realize. We've done a lot of research on what percentage of healthcare professionals could be diverting. And all of our analysis says that the percentage of healthcare workers who are diverting who are abusing drugs is really no different than the American population. And when you look at the statistics, about 10% of the American Wow. population have misused prescription medications. And so every analysis we've done says the number's probably about there. When you really study it, you find that nurses are probably a smaller percentage than that. But there's other people working in health facilities like pharmacists, anesthesia providers, that are probably a higher percentage than that. So the easiest way I've found to communicate this is if you think about a mid-sized hospital, like a 350-bed hospital, they're going to have about 1,000 nurses. And if roughly 1 in 10 of those are diverting, that's about 100 nurses. That's and it might be just an occasional pill, or it might be something much more serious, you know, vials of morphine and Dilaudid and so on. And then you put in the pharmacy might have 100 people. So you're talking about 10 more people in pharmacy that are diverting. And your anesthesia practitioners, you might have 50 or so. So you have another five or so there. Right. So you quickly get to dozens of people, even in a mid-sized hospital, that you would expect to be diverting. And just to make it a little more shocking, when we ask hospitals, you know, how many people did you detect diverting in the last few years? Most of them say, oh, maybe one or two. So on the one hand, you have dozens of people that are diverting. On the other hand, you're only catching one or two. Clearly, most of the diversion that's happening is going undetected.
Wow, that's it's quite sobering when you hear it in those sort of brutal statistics. And, you know, I think I mean, to be clear, the tragedy is, you know, these are addictive drugs and, you know, people end up. I have colleagues and friends that, you know, have told their stories and this is not a, you know, nobody gets up and says, right, I'm going to be an opioid addicted person in the morning. That's just not the way this happens. And, you know, the tragedy is that the exposure and opportunity is there. And here you are, at least finding ways to at least identify. And then hopefully that gives people the opportunity for some reconciliation and, you know, remediation against that. Do you have any sort of stories around some of the success from your work to date?
Yeah, and I want to emphasize what you just said. You know, nobody starts using these medications hoping to become addicted. Our real success is going to be finding it as early as possible, before that person has built up such a tolerance to the drug that it's going to be very difficult for them to go through recovery. Success for us is early detection, where we can help that person get the help they need to overcome their addiction. Some successes we've had, we've been working with health systems around the country. One that's been very open with their success is Piedmont Health here in Georgia. Their CEO has spoken on the topic and even published some articles. They have seen that with our software, they are occasionally able to detect someone the first day they divert.
Wow.
They had an example, actually, where before we started working with them, they had found a nurse who had been diverting. She had been on the job about 45 days and obvious impairment. She fell asleep at the nursing station, led them to suspect diversion. She confessed and then got some help. When we first went live with the software, we loaded all that historical data in as a haystack, and we asked the computer, who in this haystack of data, 1,000 nurses, do you think is diverting? And that nurse not only was the number one name on the list, wow, but the computer would have detected her on the very first day she stole medications.
Wow.
So that is evidence, and we've repeated that same experiment at every hospital, that with this technology, we can help someone get the work they need, get the support they need, and enter recovery before they hurt themselves, they overdose, or they hurt their patients.
I think the really heartening aspect to this is, you know, it comes across, or it can come across as pejorative, but that's not the purpose of this. And I think, you know, that specifically, you know, is such a positive aspect to this that allows us to say, you know, this isn't, I mean, I'm sure there are exceptions, but, you know, I come at the world, you know, the glass is full. It's half full of whiskey in my case and half full of air. And, you know, in this instance, we're trying to change the outcome and do so early, which, of course, is everything that we try and do in healthcare treating patients. And here we are sort of focusing on the people that are, you know, dedicating their lives and their work towards it. So I love this. I think it's fantastic. Unfortunately, as usual, we've run out of time. It's been just absolutely fascinating to learn about this. I'm really excited about the potential for this as we sort of watch it grow. I think there'll be other opportunities in other areas. Just remains for me to thank you for joining me, Tom. It's been a fascinating conversation.
My pleasure. Great talking with you.
Thanks for joining me today. Do you have any better ideas, or have you found a small incremental change that's brought about a big improvement in your world? Let's continue the conversation on our hashtag, The Incrementalist, or share with me at DrNick1 on Twitter. You can find more information about the show on our program page at healthcarenowradio.com. And tune in next time to hear my discussions with leaders and innovators from around the globe who've revolutionized their space by using small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and I'm starting a revolution through evolution.